Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Positively Perfect by Corinne Winters. Narrated by Emily Durante. Foreword. The meat on the grill sizzled, sending up delightful aromas into the cool night air. Overhead lanterns cast a warm glow over the backyard patio. The glass of wine in Ruby's hand had begun to lose its chill, yet she continued to grip it like a security blanket. She sat on one side of the wrought iron bench, legs crossed as she pointedly stared at her dinner companion. John Miller was a big man, broad of shoulder and long of limb. His ruggedly handsome face was crossed with an utterly tormented, perplexed look. Ruby could sympathize to a certain degree. She had just dropped a bomb in his lap, after all. Ruby had said those three little words, the most powerful three words in all of the English language, probably the most powerful words in any language, though the syllables and sounds may have changed, the concept remained the same. Her sympathy, however, had its limits, and John was quickly reaching them with his continued silence.
"Well?" Ruby prompted.
"I don't know what to say."
John swallowed.
"This is... I'm at a loss for words."
"Yeah, you said that already," Rumpus said from his perch on a nearby bird fountain. He was licking his paw, stray feathers caught in his fur.
"Redundant much."
"Rumpus, do you think you could give us some privacy?" Ruby snarled.
"Well, what's in it for me?"
Ruby scowled. "Excuse me?"
"Look, you just told John you loved him. I'm not an expert on your hairless ape courtship rituals, but I'm pretty sure he's at least open to the idea of being in love with you."
Ruby flinched, heart skipping a beat. Hearing someone else validate her opinions on the matter out loud felt good, but at the same time, Rumpus vexed her.
"So love leads to marriage. Marriage leads to children."
Rumpus's ears went back, and the plump orange cat narrowed his green eyes.
"And do you know what children do to cats? My cousin Fenric's witch had a child, and he wound up with a string of firecrackers tied to his tail."
"Rumpus," Ruby hissed through clenched teeth, "John and I are trying to have an adult conversation, which, surprise, surprise, has nothing to do with you."
"Nothing to do with me?" Rumpus was aghast. "Why, how dare you? Am I not your loyal and stalwart familiar? Am I not always there to save the day? Your major life decisions impact me. What if I decided to turn the lighthouse into a catnip den? It's basically the same thing."
"Catnip den is the same thing?"
John asked. "Don't encourage him, Buster." Ruby jutted a finger toward John. "You're not off the hook yet." Ruby heaved a long sigh, dropping her gaze to her lap.
"You don't have to say it back,"
she mumbled.
"What?"
John scooted closer to her, put his hand on her shoulder.
"What did you say?"
"I said you don't have to say it back to me, you know." Ruby felt her eyes struggling to birth tears, but refused to allow them to come. "It was stupid. I never should have said it."
"No."
John took her hand and squeezed it.
I'm glad you said it.
Ruby raised her gaze to meet his beautiful aquamarine eyes, the same color as the sea. "You are?"
"Yes,"
John said, squeezing her hand.
"I've come to care for you a great deal."
Ruby yanked her hand away and rolled her eyes. "But you don't love me."
"I didn't say that."
John sighed and ran his hand down his face.
"Look, Ruby, I'm a monarch in exile."
"I know. The merfolk cast you and your family out because your mother fell in love with a human man. I've heard this story before, John, and I fail to see its relevance to our current situation." Ruby couldn't keep some anger out of her tone. It flared through her. She'd imagined what it might be like if she and or John had confessed deep feelings for each other, but it had never gone down quite like this.
"I didn't tell you the whole story, though."
John sighed.
"It turns out that the merfolk have softened their stance on surface dwellers."
"Why?"
Jacques Cousteau and Greta Carlson, mostly, but that's beside the point. John looked at her earnestly, pain and want and tenderness all dancing in his gaze. The point is, I might, in the future, be tasked with returning to my people and fulfilling my royal obligations.
Royal obligations? So you're afraid of what, a long-distance relationship?
Royal obligations is a polite way of saying I was betrothed to a mer-princess before my exile.
I thought you were exiled when you were a kid, Ruby sputtered, unable to digest this latest nugget of iron dropped in her stomach.
Mer-royalty are often engaged before they are even born. It's an old tradition, one that I do not agree with.
Ruby closed her eyes, took a deep breath through her nose, and then opened her eyes once more. She looked John dead in the eye when she spoke. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't?
John blinked in confusion.
Why not?
Because it doesn't. Look, you've been telling me all the reasons why our relationship might not be able to go the distance, but you haven't said the one thing that I want to hear.
What's that?
How do you feel about me? Ruby's voice broke.
Ruby, I...
John began. Pop, pop, pop. They both froze. Ruby's eyes went wide.
That was...
John said. Gunfire, Ruby said. We have to go deal with this. But don't think you're off the hook yet. We are going to finish this conversation.
I knew something like this was going to happen,
Rumpus quipped. 1.
All right, men,
Rumpus snapped, walking up to the police line.
I want this area cordoned off. You there with the donut.
No, the other guy. You're eating a cruller, and crullers aren't donuts.
Keep those looky-loo civilians back. Do you want them to get killed?
Hey,
said one of the uniformed officers.
Whose cat is this, and why is he meowing so much?
Sorry. Ruby picked up Rumpus and put him on her shoulder. She grunted with the effort.
You're really getting hefty, Rumpus. Or you're just getting weaker.
Which one of us wakes up at 6 a.m. every morning to do yoga?
Not the smart one, that's for sure.
They walked to where John stood with members of the police department out front of the Fiddler's Cove Second National Bank. She frowned in alarm at the sight of a squad car riddled with bullet holes.
What's the situation, men?
John asked, having only been a step or two ahead of Ruby.
We've got at least one perp inside the building, armed with some serious ordnance, possibly an assault rifle,
answered one of the officers.
Actually, said a smarmy, pasty-faced cop with a smug look on his face, there's no such thing as assault rifles. What you're referring to is...
Ah!
Rumpus sat on the man's foot, cleaning his paw.
Newsflash, gun geek. No one cares. You say assault rifle, people know what you're talking about.
Rumpus, get off of him, Ruby snapped.
Fine.
Rumpus looked up at the cop as he leaped in the air on one foot.
You're lucky I didn't use the full power of my familiar talent, or your foot would be flatter than the state of Kansas.
At any rate,
John said with a bemused smile. Apparently he didn't much care for the officer either.
The point is, we're outgunned. Fiddler's Cove doesn't exactly have a SWAT team.
Ruby looked to the bank and frowned. The lights were off inside, making the interior dark. Most of her magic was line of sight, meaning if she couldn't see it, she couldn't affect it.
What are people doing in the bank at this hour anyway? Don't they close at like 3?
Apparently there was a retirement party for one of the tellers. That might be how our perp gained entry, by pretending to be a party guest.
John looked at the bank and stroked his chin.
We need to get our perp on the phone, try to negotiate.
I've got a better plan,
Rumpus said eagerly.
I sneak in under the cover of darkness, get behind our perp and snap his neck like a twig.
We'll use that as a backup plan,
John said, winking at Ruby to let her know he was just keeping Rumpus quiet.
Fielding, can you get me a line inside?
Sure thing, Cap.
A tall, dark-haired officer approached John and handed him a cell phone. He tapped the screen and waited.
"Why aren't you using your own phone?"
Fielding asked.
"The same reason I'm not wearing my uniform. I didn't have time to get it."
John held up his hand for silence. He put the phone on speaker, holding a finger to his lips.
"Hello? You picked up. I assume that means you want to talk."
"Yo, yo, some people talk about it, and some people be about it,"
came the reply, in an all-too-familiar voice. "Bust-a-cap?" Ruby whispered. "Isn't he in jail?" No one answered, not that she'd expected anyone to.
"Are the hostages still alive in there?"
"So far, nobody's dead. If you want it to stay that way, you're going to have to listen real carefully and do exactly like I say. Word to your mother."
"What decade is this?"
Rumpus said.
"I'm listening, Mr. Cap."
"Mr. Cap, I like the sound of that, yo. All right, this is what's up. Did you happen to see the last Indianapolis Johnson movie?"
John paused for a long moment.
"Unfortunately, yes."
"I know, right? It was terrible."
"What was with that crap at the end where he hid in a fridge to hide from a nuclear bomb?"
"Oh, don't get me started. And Shia LaBeoufo could have been replaced with a mannequin. My point is, we both know that it's time for some funky fresh energy to be infused into this series."
Buster Cap chuckled.
"And check this out. I, the master poet and scribe known as Buster Cap, have developed a script for Indianapolis Johnson, one that totally updates the franchise for the modern, totally ill era."
"I'm not sure I follow, Mr. Cap."
John frowned.
"What is it you want me to do?"
"Isn't it obvious? I want you to bring Steven Spellman here so we can approve my script. There's no way he'll ever look at it otherwise. It would never make it past the slush pile without an agent's name attached to it."
"He's right," Ruby said. "I had a heck of a time getting a publisher to take on my book because I didn't have an agent, and chances are they'll never read the slush pile." John winced, but Cap didn't seem to hear Ruby's comment.
"Mr. Cap, I'm not entirely certain I can get a man as busy as Steven Spellman to cooperate."
"Why not?"
"Well, I have no legal mandate to force him to come, for one thing. For another, getting a hold of a major celebrity and Hollywood heavyweight like him is difficult under good circumstances."
"Yo, but these are good circumstances, policeman. Look, once he takes a look at my script, he's going to be so happy he came out here. I promise you."
"You're asking for a tall order, Mr. Cap."
"Yo, that's where you're wrong,"
Buster Cap said, his tone growing harsh.
"I'm not asking you, Mr. Fuzzman. I'm telling you that if you don't get Steven Spellman and his trademark wire-rim glasses here, I'm going to kill one of my hostages."
"Look, Mr. Cap, let's not be hasty."
Sweat broke out on John's forehead.
"Once you kill a hostage, that's something you can't take back. Are you sure you want to go down that road?"
"Yo, of course I'm not wanting to go down that road. I'm not, like, evil and stuff. I'm just misunderstood, yo. But I'm totally prepared to ice some of these dorks in party hats if that's what it comes down to."
John took a deep breath to steady his nerves.
"All right, Mr. Cap. I'm going to try and get Steven Spellman to come here and look at your script."
"See, I knew we could, like, come to a Honda Accord."
"The only problem is, I need more time. It takes several hours to fly from the West Coast to the East Coast. 1 hour just isn't long enough."
"Yo, you only think that because you're one of the sheeple. The Hollywood and political elite secretly constructed a high-speed subterranean transit system that can get him here in, like, I don't know, 10 minutes or something. I saw it on the internet, and you're not allowed to lie on the internet."
"I'm not sure that's how it works."
"You're not allowed to lie on the internet," Cap bellowed. "The clock's ticking, dude."
The call ended, and John sighed. He handed Fielding back his phone and enveloped everyone in his gaze.
"Suggestions? I say we throw a flashbang or two in there."
The cop who Rumpus had sat on piped in.
Then, while he's stunned, we send in our best shot. That would be me. And blow! Totally take him down.
There are a few problems with that plan, Boyles, Fielding said with a sneer. One, we don't have any flashbangs. Number two, we have no idea what's going on inside. A flashbang can be deadly at extremely close range. We don't want to blow apart a civilian because you want to act like Sylvester Stallone in Commando.
Actually, it was Schwarzenegger in Commando, John said. But I agree with Fielding. Going in hot should be a last resort. I still think we might be able to reason with him.
Ruby let out a short bark of laughter.
Yeah, right. Busticap is about as smart as a plastic bag full of butcher knives. Unfortunately, he's also ruthless. He tried to kill me and my apprentice, remember?
That's why he was in prison, John said with a nod. I haven't forgotten. But his motivations seem to be sincere, if misguided.
I concur, Rumpus interjected. Stephen Spellman has had more misses than hits of late, and poor Mark Hamill isn't looking so hot at his age trying to wield that bullwhip and dorky hat.
Mark Hamill is timeless, Ruby said with a growl.
You're just saying that because you totally had a crush on him, Rumpus harumphed.
John laughed.
Really?
It was a long time ago, Ruby said, clearing her throat. Anyway, how are we going to get those hostages out of there?
John pursed his lips thoughtfully. He motioned for Ruby to accompany him a short distance away.
Is there any way you can help resolve this with magic?
Ruby sucked in air through her teeth.
There are a lot of ways, but the problem is Busticap has been exposed to my magic on 3 different occasions now. Every time he gets exposed, there's a chance he'll become immune to the hysterical delirium. I'll do it if I have to, but I had something else in mind.
John cocked an eyebrow at her smile.
You can't produce Stephen Spellman out of thin air, can you?
Ruby's grin widened. Hold my Chardonnay.
2.
Wait a moment, John said, shaking his head. Slow down. Are you saying you can get Stephen Spellman here? I mean, is he a friend of yours?
Never met the guy, but I'm a fan of his work.
Then how are you going to get him to agree?
Well, I'm going to ask him, Ruby said. But first I have to find him.
That's where I come in.
Rumpus reached a paw out and tapped Ruby's phone. It just so happens that I know exactly where Spellman is right now. Look.
Rumpus brought up an image on screen, his toe beans capable of activating the phone via touch. Ruby squinted at the headline. Spellman meeting with executives to discuss AT, the Angry Terrestrial 2?
The meeting is happening at Sunstalker Ranch, at his buddy Lucius George's house. All we need to do is teleport there and voila.
Not so fast, Rumpus, John said. Doesn't Ruby have to be able to see where she's teleporting to, or have been there?
Yes and no, Ruby said. If I draw a teleportation circle, I can specify coordinates in the time-space slipstream, but of course we don't have that kind of time. Still, John is right, Rumpus. I can't teleport to Sunstalker Ranch because I've never been there.
Yes, but there's always a crazy stalker fan outside of Lucius's ranch.
You know, people who are huge fans of Star Trek. Is that the thing where everyone's got a laser sword and all the colors of the rainbow and everyone hates the prequels?
Yes.
That sounds a lot like Star Wars.
Hush, John!
Rumpus put his paw on John's lips.
Do you want us to get sued?
Oh, right. I get it. John winked. Copyright laws stink.
They do when you're just trying to have fun, Ruby replied dryly. How do fans parked outside of Sunstalker Ranch help us teleport there?
Simple. All we have to do is find one of those basement-dwelling trolls live-streaming their obsession on the internet. We see a live vid of Sunstalker, and bamf, instant teleport.
I hate to admit it, Ruby muttered. But Rumpus has a pretty good idea this time.
Of course it's a good idea.
You hairless apes would be lost without me. Admit it.
Ruby sighed and scrolled through her social media accounts.
Let's just hope that someone's live streaming right now.
Son of a gun, there is someone live streaming right this second.
Ruby opened the video, and a pasty, bearded, and noticeably overweight white man's sneering visage appeared.
And furthermore, we the Star Trek fans demand that Brisby remake The Last Virgin and remove all scenes with female characters acting competent. Everyone knows that women aren't good at fighting. Also, Duke Sunstalker is way more powerful than that. Just read my fan fiction, and you'll see that he can snap his fingers and defeat the Worst Order.
Wow, this guy is certainly, passionate,
John said. Passionate about being a misogynistic, hate-filled, unintelligent bore, Ruby sneered. I'm starting to feel less bad about this.
Hurry up and teleport before he gets a hankering for Dorquitos and Code Crimson Fountain Spew,
Rumpus said. I can't. All he's showing is his own ugly face. Suddenly the camera changed to show a vast compound bigger than some college campuses.
We know that you're in there, Lucius. We, the Star Trek fandom, demand that you buy the rights to the franchise back from Brisney. We will not be silenced.
Okay, here we go. Wish me luck, John.
Very well.
Ruby gasped as John grabbed her behind the small of her back and crushed her to his chest. He kissed her deeply, and for a long moment Ruby forgot all about the plan to get Steven Spellman.
Okay, she said, her cheeks turning red. You can wish me good luck like that any old time you want.
Be careful, Ruby,
John said, swallowing hard.
I had a lot of time to think about you in the last week. If anything happened to you, I'd...
Nothing's going to happen, but you're sweet.
Ruby kissed him, then closed her eyes and chanted the harsh, arcane syllables, which would direct eldritch energy to transfer across space and time. There was a slight pop, as air was displaced by her arrival. John would have heard a similar pop where he was standing, as air rushed in to replace the vacuum she'd left behind. Ruby opened her eyes and found that she stood next to the basement-dwelling troll spewing his vitriol. She knew time was of the essence, yet...
Wanna mess with him a little?
You bet,
Ruby said with a grin. She cast a disguise spell, making herself look like the character Duke Sunstalker from the Star Trek franchise. Rumpus shifted to appear as Goka, the wizened green frogman who trained Duke in the ways of the space wizards. Ruby, as Duke, walked up behind the troll.
Boo!
He turned around, mouth gaping open.
That's the best cosplay I've ever seen!
It's not cosplay,
Ruby said, her voice altered as well.
What do you mean?
The troll scoffed.
I'm not stupid. I know it's all just made-up stories, which is why I'm so mad at Brisney for...
It's all real, Ruby said.
I knew it!
The troll pumped his fist in the air.
I knew it! Hang on, let me get you on camera.
Ruby waved her hand like the space wizards did, and his phone flew out of his hand.
Now you listen to me, Spanky. Women are just like men. Some of them are dumb, but most of them are at least reasonably intelligent. You need to stop being so mean to them and show more respect if you want to earn your space wizard's laser sword. I will, I promise.
Good. Ruby teleported again, this time just a short distance inside the fence of the Sunstalker compound. She dropped her disguise as she approached the front door. The bodyguards standing outside moved to intercept.
This is private property.
You can't see me,
Ruby said, waving her open palm in front of her face.
Where did she go?
The guard blurted. They both ran out into the yard with their flashlights, looking for Ruby as she opened the front door and walked right in. She found Steven Spellman sitting in a large den with a roaring fire. He sat on a large sofa designed to look like a starship from the Drek films and was talking enthusiastically and gesturing wildly with his hands.
And that's when Hero Shark shows up and starts biting the bad guys' heads off. I'm telling you, this could be my new franchise.
Across the sofa from him, Lucius George didn't seem convinced. He pushed his glasses up on his nose.
I don't know, Steve. What's the market for this film? You know aquatic-based merchandise doesn't sell nearly as well.
Always with the merchandising. You know there's a little thing called filmmaking. Perhaps you've heard of it?
You're one to talk. You couldn't swing a dead shark without hitting a Cretaceous Park t-shirt or bumper sticker or coffee mug there for a while.
Ahem, Ruby said, drawing their attention.
It's about time,
Steve said with a growl.
Yeah, we've been waiting for hours.
Lucius's eyes narrowed.
You don't look anything like your photo. You'd better be real good at your job.
Ruby put her hands on her hips. Exactly who do you think I am?
I don't think she's our, company for the night, Steve.
Darn right I'm not. Ruby walked over to Steven Spellman. Look, I can tell you're busy, I guess, but I really need your help. It's literally a matter of life or death.
Oh my goodness, that sounds serious,
Steve said.
What can I do to help?
Really? Ruby flinched. That was easier than I expected. Both men burst into laughter and then high-fived.
Really had her going there, Steve-o,
Lucius howled.
You know it.
Ruby ran a hand down her face. You know what? To heck with this. She chanted the words to a spell and snapped her fingers. Lucius George turned blue as he froze into a human icicle.
Lucius?
Steven said, his mouth gaping open.
Did I eat that many shrooms?
Come on, Mr. Epic Director, Ruby said, taking Steven's hand. Don't worry, I'll erase your memories of all of this.
What about Lucius?
He'll be fine. Ruby began to chant the spell, but Rumpus had one more thing to say to Steven Spellman.
Say, are you the Steven Spellman who directed Close Encounters of the Sixth Kind and the Shark Movie? Or the Steven Spellman who directed 1942 and Sugarland Expresso?
Steven Spellman's eyes narrowed darkly. Don't antagonize him, Rumpus. All directors have flops.
Exactly,
Spellman blurted.
I think those are underrated films.
Please, Rumpus said, rolling his eyes. I mean, Belushi was red hot back then, and you still manage not to make any money off of a movie starring him. You have to be trying to mess up to fail that badly.
Enough, Rumpus, Ruby said.
You're right,
Spellman said, his shoulders slumping.
I'm not an auteur. I'm just a hack. I make movies about dinosaurs and aliens and old men with bullwhips fighting Nazis. And don't get me started on Toy Boy here.
Now's not the time for an existential crisis, Steve, Ruby said. Now come on, take my hand.
Where are we going?
To meet your number one fan.
Dear God, no,
Spellman sputtered.
Can't you just freeze me, too?
3.
Bamf.
John jumped a foot in the air when Ruby appeared in the alleyway beside the bank, Steve Spellman in tow.
You did it. You really did it. But how?
I'm allergic to being turned into a human popsicle,
Spellman said bitterly.
Now where's this fan you want me to meet? Is it a wish kid again? Because dying children are so much less funny than other dying people.
Actually, it's a bank robber. Ruby turned Spellman around and pushed him across the street.
Wait a minute. Shouldn't I be wearing a bulletproof vest or something?
Spellman blurted. I don't know, Ruby shrugged. Probably. Busta Cap had arranged his hostages along the large picture windows near the bank's entrance. Ruby saw their terrified faces and felt a stab of sympathy. She vowed to see each and every one of them get out safely.
Wait a minute,
Spellman said when they got to the entrance.
I'm having second thoughts about this.
You should have said that before trying to make Coward the Drake,
Rumpus said.
Don't blame that crud on me. That was Lucius's doing.
Hey, Rumpus said to Ruby as they strove to shove Spellman through the front door. How is it that this guy can understand what I'm saying?
He's not a witch or a magical being.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?